This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Eric Anglada from the Catholic Worker House, and we're going to be talking about anarchism and Christianity. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you.
Now, why anarchism and Christianity? The two may not seem to go together to all of our listeners.
Right. At first listen, it seems to be kind of oxymoronic, I think. Well, at first, you know, dangerous territory with both of these terms, and so I should probably say what we don't mean. By anarchism, we do not mean violence or chaos or disorder or terrorism or bomb throwers or anything like that. And by Christianity, I don't mean status quo, conservative, accommodationist Christianity. So in bridging the two, anarchism on the one hand is about decentralization, mutual aid, voluntary associations, and we think that's the most congruent of political options for Christians who find their center in compassion and love.
Now, you used the term we, and you've just come, I know, from the fourth annual conference on anarchism and Christianity. The first two were in New York City, the next one was in Chicago, and now this one was in Champaign-Urbana. 100 people came to this.
Yes.
Who beyond those 100 make up this group that's interested in thinking about these kind of issues of anarchism and Christianity?
Who beyond the 100?
Yeah, how big is this we, I guess is my question.
I really don't know. There's a lot of the organization for these conferences has come through a website called JesusRadicals.com. And a few years back, I came across this website and found this line of thought quite intriguing and eventually convincing. So there's a forum there where people post articles and such, and there's, I think, over 300 or so people registered on there. And surely, you know, it's broader than that. But I really don't know. I don't know how serious of a movement we could say we are. But I think it's gaining momentum, and I think people are dissatisfied as Christians with what is happening in terms of Christianity, and of course George Bush bringing together a quite conservative, one could say even imperial, form of Christianity, and I think there's a growing number of people who are disturbed by that, and so, you know, we're trying to bring people together to talk about what does Christianity really mean outside of the way that it's dominantly known.
Now, you yourself have been a volunteer at the Catholic Worker House here locally for how long now?
4 years.
4 years. You're Catholic.
Yes, you could say that. I've just started the process of officially joining the Catholic Church, but people identify me as Catholic, and I've taken on that identity for the most part.
What's your background religiously?
My background is I was raised non-religious, kind of nominally Protestant. We maybe would go to Christmas services, but most likely not. When I moved to Champaign, I went to an Episcopalian church for a while. And then I was going to a Mennonite church for a little while, and now I'm attending St. Mary's Catholic Church.
And who makes up the group that gathered here in Champaign this last weekend for this conference? Are they mainly Catholic, Protestants? Since it's the title is Anarchism and Christianity,
right,
I presume
right.
They're mostly Christian.
Mostly Christian, yes. There are a few secular anarchists who started out kind of confused how Christians get to call themselves anarchists. I hope by the end of the weekend they could begin to see the connection a little bit more clearly. In terms of the religious makeup, it's a fairly ecumenical gathering. There were a few Catholics. There were Catholic workers represented. There was one speaker who comes from the Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox tradition. And lots of people who have started their own house churches, and then people that are involved in non-denominational evangelical churches.
And what's the age of these folks? Now, you're a relatively young fellow.
Yeah, I'm 26, and there's a lot of people there in their 20s. I'd say that's the dominant makeup. But we had several people who are in their 50s and 60s as well.
More male than female?
Probably about even.
Okay. And where did these people come from?
All over. We had a couple from New Zealand. There was supposed to be a couple from Greece, but at the last minute they couldn't make it. There were several people here from Champaign-Urbana locally. There was a bunch of people from Minneapolis, people from Chicago, people from rural Indiana, people from Kansas City, really all over the place. People from California.
So one of the reasons for picking Champaign-Urbana as the site for this fourth annual conference was its central location?
Not necessarily. I kind of stepped up and said I'd be willing to organize this. This is the fourth annual. The first 3 years I was just an attendee, not necessarily a participant, and certainly not an organizer. Nikisha and Andy Alexis Baker are the two that have really started this. They were the one that started the website and began the conference in their Mennonite church in New York City. So this year, they're now in northern Indiana in Elkhart at the Associated Mennonite Biblical Seminary, and they were a little bit low on funds and short of time, and I stepped up and said I'd be happy to organize something like this. And have people come stay at the Catholic Worker House, where we had people all over the place, and we had tents in the backyard. And so it's something that I enjoyed quite a bit and just had a lot of fun with, and kind of an experiment in many ways.
And you rented some meeting space from the Illinois Disciples Foundation
right.
on campus.
Right. On Friday and Saturday, we met at the Illinois Disciples Foundation. People slept at the Catholic Worker.
And over 100 people.
Yes.
So tell us about the main issue. This conference was called Here in This Place, Anarchism and Christianity in This Context.
Right.
Tell me about place and context.
Okay. So last year, several of the sessions ended up being about what's happening internationally. For example, in Argentina, workers, after the recent economic collapse, lots of the bosses left their factories and essentially abandoned their factories. The workers stayed and began to organize themselves into a kind of egalitarian alternative economy. There's also the Zapatista Revolution in Chiapas, Mexico, where it's essentially, they haven't said they're explicitly anarchists, but they're essentially an anarchistic movement in that they are not trying to take over state power. So this year we wanted to give a sense of here in this place, in this context of basically U.S. empire. How do we as Christians and anarchists living in the United States deal with these questions rather than looking to, internationally for examples?
So the context for this year was the U.S. seen as empire.
Yes, you could say that.
You just did.
Yeah.
And so would most of the people at this conference have that kind of a view of the U.S., that it really is an imperialistic power at this point internationally?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And does that analysis come partly from Christianity? From a Christian perspective?
Sure. Yeah, it's just a different way of viewing the Gospels. I know the predominant way, if we turn on the TV or if we listen to the radio and Christians who are, I say so-called Christians, I personally don't see how their beliefs and practices are congruent with Jesus Christ myself. So it's a way of saying, this isn't what Christianity really is about. And it's in many ways, it's trying to reclaim the biblical tradition and trying to reclaim a tradition that's, throughout the 2,000 years has remained steady, although unfortunately it's been essentially a minority movement. We can talk about Constantine, who was the emperor of Rome in the 4th century, who legalized Christianity. So I think in many ways you could describe more accurately Christianity today as Constantinian. which is a melding of Christianity with the dominant power structure, which for the first three centuries was not there. And there's what you could call kind of a subterranean tradition of Christianity that we are trying to reclaim and articulate and make known.
And what would you see as central to that type of Christianity?
I guess central for me and probably most of the people that were there is coming to grips with nonviolence. Simply violence has nothing to do with Christianity. And really nonviolence leads me into an anarchist view because the state, Randolph Bourne, writing during World War I, said war is the health of the state. And essentially that, you can define the state as they have the legitimate, they're the only ones that are viewed as having legitimate means of violence. If you look at the police or prisons or the death penalty or war, they can, coerce people, they can kill people, all very legally. So I think certainly one of the central motifs of the state is violence. So if we are taking Jesus of Nazareth seriously and his pacifism, I think that leads us into an anarchist position because if you look at socialism or the Greens or Democrats, Republicans, they're all working within the paradigm of the state. And it's only the anarchists who are trying to imagine different ways outside of the state apparatus.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Eric Anglada from the Catholic Worker House in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, about a recent conference here on anarchism and Christianity. We do want to encourage listeners to take part in this conversation. I'm happy to ask questions, but eager to have other people join me. And if people would like to make comments in response to some of these issues, we have phone lines to let you do that. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may call us 1-800-222-9455. That's a toll-free call, 1-800-222-WILL. The call letters of the station, of course. In Champaign-Urbana, there are two or three local lines you can access by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455 will access our toll-free long-distance line. So if it's a long-distance call, do use that number. And I see we have a call on line 4 already. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Your guest made a comment that Jesus was a pacifist. But I don't see where, other than when he said, turn the other cheek if somebody strikes you, I don't see where else it speaks that Jesus is a pacifist in the Bible. Quite the contrary, there's a lot of scripture that Jesus wasn't a pacifist. I'm curious what your guest has to say about that.
Well, I guess the only thing that would be questionable in terms of Jesus maybe not being a pacifist would be Jesus' action in the temple, which I'm assuming this caller is alluding to. So I guess I should make a distinction. When I talk about nonviolence, I'm talking about towards persons. And certainly Jesus was not violent towards people at all. In the temple, he was essentially destroying property, and we can discuss the legitimacy of that if anyone wants to. But love your enemy, turn the other cheek. The Sermon on the Mount, I think, is fairly explicit that the way of violence is not the way of God. So I'm not sure, maybe the caller could call back and articulate more of how he sees that. But I mean, the cross is really kind of the example par excellence. I mean, Jesus certainly, was unjustly executed, and, something that he could have surely fought back, something that would have been, just, but he refused that option.
We may have the same caller back. Let's see. Line number 4, are you there?
Yes, I'm back.
Yes.
The scripture tells us that the kingdom of the very kingdom of heaven is gained by violence. Jesus came as a two-edged sword. I wish I knew more about what this organization stands for and what we're trying to to grasp, because the very structure of the kingdom of God, Christ's kingdom, is one where there is a head, where there is structure, there is order, which right. contradicts what I understand is anarchy.
Well, okay, that's a good point. So anarchism is not against organization or order per se. Joseph Pierre Proudhon, one of the more famous anarchists, said that order is the daughter of liberty, not the mother. That if we are truly free, we will create order. So anarchists are against not organization per se, but against top-down authoritarian order. That is how the government works. I believe that people can come together in voluntary association and mutual aid and build order from the bottom up.
But isn't the structure of God's kingdom that order is formed from the top down?
From God down?
Yeah.
Well, God is the king. So it's a kind of nuanced anarchism, but there is no human representative for God.
Jesus is not the human representative for God?
You could say that, but living here now, there is no Jesus isn't physically present to be our leader. Jesus said that, talking about the Gentiles, that is the Romans, that they lord it over people. But it is not supposed to be like that amongst you. That is the Christians. You're supposed to be the servant of all. We can talk scripturally. Within the Hebrew Bible, you have in the book of Samuel, the first book, chapter 8. It's an interesting chapter where the people, the Jews, their early Jewish people, were living without a king. God was their ruler.
Right.
But God doesn't rule through domination. I think essentially the central insight of the New Testament is that God is love, and I think love is inherently non-coercive. So the people want a king. They say they want to be like the rest of the nations, and God takes this as a rejection of his status, and so. Basically, the people have rejected God, and God says, you will be enslaved, you will be oppressed when you have a king, but I will give you a king because this is what you want. And the rest of the Hebrew Bible is essentially that sad, brutal history of being oppressed and enslaved by one empire after another.
And one of the specific examples given in that 1 Samuel 8 passage, as I remember it, is that, you'll get a king, but they're going to call you up to fight wars.
Right, exactly.
So when you're speaking of that, the Jews were being disobedient, and for that reason, that's why Samuel speaks about that. But we're talking about New Testament now,
uh-huh.
about what Jesus stood for, about his words, and about the very law behind his words. Moreover, even when we have in Scripture what Paul said, talking about the structure that we should have, there's very structure in how the church should, it says about the body of believers, how they should organize.
And, and everyone has their...
Say it again, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead and finish, caller.
So when I hear the term anarchy, and maybe it would be good to... to plainly define what anarchy means as far as this organization, it seems to contradict the very order, especially the authority and order that is dictated in the New Testament.
Well, thank you very much. I think we take your point. I'll give our guest a chance to say again what this group feels is the central part of anarchy in terms of its relation to Christianity.
Anarchy, at its most basic literal sense from the ancient Greek, means without rulers. Anarchism, as I use it, is in a slightly more broad way, just means no domination, that we are not supposed to dominate one another. And so the early Christians were a society that I think properly understood lived in a state of anarchy. They had no human ruler leading over them. They had no dominator over them.
And in terms, just to follow up on the questions, the points raised by the caller, when you talk about an ideal kind of a social structure, and you say no rulers, no domination, no authority, no top-down authoritarian order, what kind of an order do you see? What would be the ideal for you as a Christian anarchist?
Well, and the thing about anarchism is there's it's frustrating in a way because there's no blueprint. I don't want to tell people how they should live. I can only say how I want to live, and I want to come together in voluntary association with others that we can figure out a way to live together without a boss or without a king. That essentially we can figure it out on our own. Anarchism is not a system that you can just plug in and give these easy answers. There's no blueprint. Instead, I think anarchism is a kind of attitude, a tendency that questions authority.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the issues that came up at this conference that was just held here in Champaign-Urbana, where people came from all over the country to talk about these kind of issues. Who were some of the speakers?
Well, I was one of them. I did a primer on this, but there was quite a few others. Some of the when I was giving my primer, there was a talk by I think a faculty member in a seminary up north of Chicago, talking about education and anarchist approach, talking about homeschooling. There was a panel of speakers talking about their experiences living in community with one another. There was a talk given by an Orthodox priest who was talking about the early church fathers, you could say pre-Constantinian Christianity. There was another talk by the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies, who are essentially anarcho-syndicalists. There was a discussion on technology and the role of technology in our own society, the role of the police. There was also a panel discussing how do we become more environmentally sustainable. And so those are kind of the basics there. There's, in terms of anarchism, the classic anarchist is against the state, but I think there's kind of a new form of anarchism that sees the state as the problem, but also other forms of domination, that is capitalism, that is domination over the environment, that is our technological society, patriarchy, all of these kinds of archies, you could say, these power structures, these domination systems, starting to question them and figure out alternative ways to do them. And it's anarchism, I think, takes a creative and imaginative engagement with what's going on. How can we imagine different ways to live with one another without domination? And when I'm saying anarchy or anarchism, I'm not talking about some kind of a utopia. This is not some ideal paradise. I think it's a direction we need to move in. And if there is ever a case where we live in anarchy, it will be always a constant struggle. There will never be an end to anarchy, because I think there's two tendencies within our human nature, and that's the impulse towards good, and there's the impulse towards bad. So if we can figure out more the impulse towards good, I think that the impulse towards evil and bad increases as we give people more and more power. Lord Acton famously said, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think that's something that we have to figure out. How do we decentralize power, and how do we resist domination in its myriad forms?
Eric, you volunteered a year ago when this conference was in Chicago to help organize it this year, and it happened just this last weekend. Now, in a sense, you were a servant leader. You volunteered. My guess is you got no pay for this.
Right.
And yet you had a certain authority. You got to invite speakers, I take it.
Right.
You got to make a list of who was going to talk when. You picked yourself as one of the speakers.
Right.
You had some authority. Now, how did the other people deal with that?
Well, we did try to consciously create at least one session that was open for people to suggest topics that we didn't talk about and we didn't address. You know, I hope that I wasn't lording my authority over people, but trying to serve people. And the responses that I got were that this was something that was very valuable to them, and that I was able to provide essentially a service to people. So I think there can be situations where there's, you know, temporary authority. You know, if I'm in a group of people and we're putting in a sink or something, and someone knows how to do it, you know, I'm gonna listen to what they're saying. You know, this isn't an established authority that, you know, can extend beyond that. But there is, I think, situations where, I mean, people can consent to the giving authority to others.
We have two callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I was just curious. You said that you were in the process of converting to Catholicism.
Yes.
I guess I could be called a former Catholic. But I was just wondering, how do you view the Pope, or how do you view the organization of the Church? How do you believe you'll be fitting into that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question, certainly, and something that I'm struggling with and which I'm going to enter into this process is how can I reconcile being an anarchist and a Catholic? The co-founder of the Catholic worker movement, Dorothy Day, is probably the most notable Catholic anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's Cardinal John Henry Newman, writing in the early 20th century, talked about conscience and the primacy of conscience. And he said, even before the Pope, there is our conscience. And so if the Church respects our conscience, then I can certainly go along with that. Coming out of the Second Vatican Council, I don't think I could be a Catholic if there was no Second Vatican Council.
Mm-hmm.
The church is not the hierarchy. It's not the institution. It's the people of God. And really, my desire to join the Catholic Church is to essentially work from within that institution to create more of a, I don't know, you could say egalitarian church, which perhaps is naive, but the Catholic worker is certainly my way into the respecting the Catholic faith and coming across Catholics who are deeply, deeply radical, who are bridging the church with their quite radical politics, and they're able to do it. And I think there's also within Catholic social teaching is the principle of subsidiarity, which I respect a lot. And that's essentially saying, you know, the people that are closest to the situation should be making the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope that, you know, eventually we can get the church to shift. And I think if the church is if people take seriously that the church is the people of God and not the hierarchy, then we can become the real leaders, and then we can have the bishops and the cardinals and the Pope follow us. I think that's the ideal. You know, does that work in practice? I'm not sure. This is kind of why I'm going to be undergoing this process and really trying to figure it out. But in terms of, I guess theologically, I would find myself more with the Mennonites and Anabaptists. We can talk a little bit about them if you're curious, but otherwise, liturgically, in terms of actually going to church, what I find most meaningful is the Eucharist and the sacraments within the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a struggle, but I've, you know, the mystics and the saints of the church has just been deeply inspiring to me. And so there, I think Catholicism is a large tent, and we're united by the liturgy. But there's certainly a large plurality to it. And I've found through the Catholic worker movement and others, such as the Berrigan brothers, a tradition that I can hold to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there are people on the other side of the tent that are quite different.
Right.
And what is your relationship to what used to be called liberation theology.
Mm-hmm. Liberation theology, there's a book called The Anarchist Dimension of Liberation Theology. I think the author stretches it a little bit. I like liberation theology in terms of what is happening with the base communities, for example, and lots of popular education that the workers and the peasants are reading the Bible or in their own context and creating quite subversive readings of the scriptures. But my only serious reservation about liberation theology is its, I guess you could probably pinpoint it, the influence through Marxism. And that's a very state-based revolution.
Mm-hmm.
You see in various revolutions through the 70s and 80s that I really liked the impulse and what they were trying to work towards. My only problem is that they were working through that by taking over state power and forcing others to live that way, which I disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
So a kind of interesting nuance to liberation theology is a group which I've already mentioned, the Zapatistas in Chiapas, Mexico, who are revolting against the so-called New World Order of capitalism, where they have to compete on the global economy, and they're revolting not to take over state power, but to say we simply want to live autonomously as we have for centuries, and building communities of cooperation and consensus.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. We have another caller waiting. You're listening to Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker, your usual host. This is AM 580. WILL, a radio service of the College of Communications here at the University of Illinois. We have a caller waiting on our toll-free line, line 4. Thank you for your patience.
Thanks. It's been interesting hearing about the different agendas and different motivations of this organization. And it's clear to me from the Bible that Jesus gives us personal commandments. Certainly we're commanded to love one another and to love God. More importantly, I think that he's given us corporate commands as well, the Great Commission, to go and seek and save the lost, to go and preach the gospel and baptize in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. I'm concerned that so far what I've heard about this organization, there's a lot of busyness and a lot of objectives, but I haven't heard any objectives that line up with the most simple that Jesus tells us to do. And what that would concern me about is sometimes we can get so busy with the religiosity and liturgy and all of this organization stuff and simply miss the point. I didn't hear Jesus tell us to be concerned about, quite frankly, anything I've heard on the program so far. But what he did make very clear seems to be being ignored. And sometimes a whole lot of movement or a whole lot of busyness actually is no progress at all.
Thank you for that point. Let's let our guest respond. Eric, what do you think Jesus told his followers to do?
Certainly preaching, I think, is part of it, and go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And I think that there's part of this organization is that we see the lost sheep as being Christians themselves, and they've lost the kind of grasp of the central, the Sermon on the Mount, I think, is central in the Beatitudes. Blessed are the merciful, love your enemy. You cannot serve two masters. I think that there's a deeply mystical aspect to Christ, and I think that is a relationship to God. How do we do that? How do we live together? And Jesus, created a kind of counter community to the dominant path of society, and they were servants, and they were preaching peace in a time of great turmoil, when people wanted to rise up against the Roman state, the quite oppressive Roman state, and Jesus counseled something different. I think the Sermon on the Mount is certainly central and ethics. Jesus was very concerned with how do we live? How do we live with each other? And this is where I feel like Christianity is consonant with anarchism, because Jesus preached that we shouldn't be concerned with power and empire. And how do we live without those things? And how do we really point to the reality of the living God? And we don't do that by invading countries or anything like that. We do it by loving our enemies, by feeding our enemies, by feeding the poor. Matthew 25 is certainly a central text where Jesus talks about the last judgment. And he says that basically you will be judged on whatever you've done to the least of these. Have you fed the hungry? Have you housed the homeless? Have you visited the sick and imprisoned? I think these are central. So I'm not exactly sure what the caller is completely getting at, but I think we need to, you know, St. Francis said, preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, you use words. We need to lead lives that are very deeply attractive to people and that they want to become a part of that reality. I mean, the early Christians, you know, we understand the missionary position classically as, you know, going out and preaching and trying to win converts and the like. But really, the early Christians won converts by creating a contrast society, by living differently, by taking care of the poor, by living peaceably with each other, by sharing possessions with each other. And that was what primarily drew people into the Christian community.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, our guest is Eric Anglada, a 26-year-old volunteer for the last 4 years at the local Catholic Worker House, who was one of the organizers of a conference here in Champaign-Urbana, the fourth annual conference on anarchism and Christianity. We have several callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello there. Maybe in just what he finished saying, that must have explained why so many affluent Westerners flocked to Calcutta to spend time working with Mother Teresa. And she was quite conservative herself in her political views, but when it came right down to it, she lived her faith by caring for those who were the most helpless. And really, I have a question for you. I wish I could have been to your conference yesterday, David Johnson, with Carpenters for a Democratic Union, and the IWW is there. And I must say, for the religious context, in the Quran and in the Talmud or the Torah, where are our other brothers and sisters called to do much the same? Because I would assume somewhere in their scriptural readings, the message from God is pretty much the same. But I'm not. I understand the Beatitudes, and I use them in my wedding, just because they make so damn much sense.
Yes.
You know, if we're going to care for one another, this is who we care for first.
Right.
But was there enough cross religious discussion? Because once again, we seem to be stuck in this turmoil between whose religion is more important. And as I have a T-shirt that says, God is too big to fit into one religion. But I'd like to know if our Muslim and our Jewish friends and our Hindu friends and our Shinto friends, anybody else was represented or at least shared their particular points of view yesterday.
Not really. I mean, we call it an anarchism and Christianity conference. We can't cover it all. I think that we need to kind of focus in our particular tradition. You know, there may be parallels within the Muslim faith and Judaism. I think Judaism there certainly is. I think the prophets were one of the most radical figures in history. I think anarchism as a tendency really began in the ancient Far East with Taoism and Buddhism. So I think there is some parallels being drawn. But, I mean, really, if we're focusing in on all these religions, I'm not sure how much focus there really could have been. But certainly if people had come to the table wanting to dialogue that on that, we would have hopefully given them a forum to do that.
Thank you for the comment and question. Let's go to another caller on line number two. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Eric Anglada.
Hello. I'd like to know if Dietrich Bonhoeffer would be someone you would suggest we read to talk about radical Christianity?
I haven't read a whole lot of Bonhoeffer myself. I know that he was a radical theologian, and there were actually several people that mentioned reading Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I guess my only problem, and you know, it's difficult to judge Bonhoeffer for this, but of course he was involved in the assassination plot of Hitler. And as, you know, as tempted as I am to agree with that, I simply cannot. I think that we always must remain faithful to Christ, and even if that means being seemingly ineffective, you know, I can judge that now, however many years later, in a totally different context. But Dietrich Bonhoeffer, certainly, I would suggest people look at him. You know, he was in New York City as the Nazis rose to power and came back to Germany. And that's something I have profound respect for. And I believe he was part of maybe the Confessing Church.
Yes, that's right.
Right, which, you know, is just denounced Hitler as essentially, I think, satanic. And so I think that's the prophetic role of a church was that Bonhoeffer was doing. Where I draw the line, though, is being a part of an assassination plot. I'm kind of intrigued, though, his letters and papers from prison. He started to begin developing a kind of theology of religionless Christianity, which I'm intrigued by, but I don't know a whole lot about.
Well, I'll hang up, but I was wondering, could you list some authors?
Sure.
So that people like me could go do some more reading?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot. Probably the best book, it's a small book, Jacques Ellul, his last name is Ellul, is probably the most prominent theologian within this circle. And he wrote a small book, about 100 pages, which is called Anarchy and Christianity. Just a fantastic book. I don't agree with him on 100%, but he puts forth, I think, a pretty potent case for bringing together anarchism and Christianity as sharing a similar orientation. So that's, and that actually can be found online at JesusRadicals.com. Other Ellul writings would be good as well. The Subversion of Christianity would be good. He was influenced in some ways by Soren Kierkegaard, who was the 19th century Danish philosopher. In terms of a biblical analysis, something that I just really kind of blew my mind was a book by Ched Myers, C-H-E-D, last name Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, and he wrote a book called Binding the Strong Man, a Political Reading of Mark's Gospel. And it's just, it's a thick book. It's kind of dense in some ways, but it's just really outstanding. Another book is Walter Wink has a book called Engaging the Powers, and he's got a particularly great chapter called Jesus and the Domination System, where he just looks at all these various ways that there was this domination system in Jesus' day. Just off the top of my head in terms of patriarchy, Jesus challenging patriarchy. Walter Wink says, in every single encounter with women, he violated the social mores of his day. I mean, he's very subversive. And so what's important about these analyses are is that they put Jesus in his context. And it's kind of a paradox that only when we put Jesus in his context is he free to speak to us today. And I think once we see that context, very powerful prophet, at the very least. You know, think about the Jesus action in the temple. We think of, you know, temple, okay, it's a religious institution. But really, there was no separation then between these different, you know, sociology, economics, religion. All of these different fields were united. It was the center of the domination system. And when Jesus attacked the temple, he wasn't simply attacking the religious authorities. They were creating a socially oppressive system that he was critiquing. And Ched Myers brings this out. So those are a few writers. In terms of an anarchist writing, Peter Kropotkin is someone who's interesting. Dorothy Day, who is the Catholic Worker co-founder, would often talk about her anarchism in terms of Peter Kropotkin, who is a 19th century Russian biologist who, writing just a bit after Darwin, agreed, yes, you know, there is indeed evolution, but it's not, we don't survive through competition. He saw the exact opposite. He saw that we survive through cooperation with each other. So he's someone that's notable. Colin Ward has a short book called Anarchy in Action that's worth reading. There's another book by David Graeber, G-R-A-E-B-E-R, called Fragments of an Anarchist Anthropology, Prickly Paradigm Press, which can be found online.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith, Eric Anglada, sharing in answer to one of our caller's questions, some of the resources available on anarchy and Christianity. We're down to about our last 12 minutes of Keeping the Faith on this Sunday afternoon. This is a live program that's here weekly on WILL. Let me give the phone numbers again because we can slip in another caller or two. I will ask people who've already called to wait and give other people an opportunity if others want to make a comment or ask a question to our guest, Eric Anglada. In Champaign-Urbana, punch in 333-9455 for access to two or three local lines. Elsewhere, toll-free, including on the Internet, 1-800-222-9455. And if you missed the first part of this program and are interested in hearing that, in a week or so, it'll be up on the WILL website, so you can hear it again. Just go to WILL.UIUC.edu, go to AM 580, and then Keeping the Faith. And past programs are also archived there if you've missed some of our previous programs. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for Keeping the Faith. And I see we have another couple callers. Well, let's go to line number one. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello. I'm interested in what the Orthodox speaker had to say about pre-Constantine Christianity and anarchy. I'm going to listen and hang up.
I'm probably not the best person to answer that question. In terms of the Orthodox tradition, I'm kind of drawing a little bit of a blank on what he was talking about. He was talking about anarcho-communism, which is that the Russian tradition of Kropotkin that I mentioned already. And he was kind of making the case that the Orthodox have a less hierarchical institution than the Western Church. So he was talking about a few different things. One of them was a different understanding of atonement that than the Western Church has through Augustine, and that's a, kind of a substitutionary blood sacrifice kind of atonement that Jesus or God needed Jesus to die. And was saying that essentially that Jesus died as a result of his subversive ministry. That's one example. He was a part of somewhat of a, I'm not sure if dissident would be the right word, but it's the Orthodox Church of America, and their bishops, you know, have secular jobs and really don't have a whole lot of authority. So that's a couple of things, but I'm sorry, I'm kind of inadequate to
Eric,
to answer that.
Eric, let me ask for people who might be interested in any of the that topic or any others from the recent conference here, will some of the talks, the papers, the ideas be discussed online at JesusRadicals.com
or any papers published there? They could be, but we're actually, all of the talks were recorded on an MP3 player, and as soon as Nikisha and Andy get those recorded, people can send in $5 and get an MP3 with all of the talks on them.
And so that's available through
JesusRadicals.com. It'll take at least a few days to get that up there, but at some point...
People can listen themselves.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, thank you. And thank you, caller. And we have another caller on line number two. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I just happened to catch bits of this driving into Champaign, and I want to compliment the show. I don't listen to this very often, hardly ever. Just odd time. But anyhow, excellent discussion, excellent comment, and I want to congratulate the commentator for actually for his work at the Catholic Worker House. I don't know of him, but we support that for his parishes. Question. It's amazing how everybody wants to rewrite history. Really, if you use the term anarchy in the 1917, 1916, 15, 14, pre-World War One, World War One, and after, you would be talking about Lenin, Marx, every German that wanted to get rid of the monarchy, every Russian that wanted to get rid of every out of the Tsar. You really, they had absolutely no interest in the religious aspect of anarchy.
Right.
That was the classic historical modern history of anarchy. So I'm just a little concerned that we're revisiting a subject when you talk to most governments for the last 150 years. Anarchists were basically, I won't call them criminals, but they were certainly had no interest in a religious or Christian or Jewish or Muslim or Orthodox ideas.
Okay.
Mass murder would appeal to these folks because
right.
that was a way to get rid of the Tsar. They were all for it.
Right. Can I?
So anyhow, my question is: how can you really? You know, you're talking about stuff that just. In the historical, in the governmental context, it just doesn't make any sense.
Okay, I'll address that. The first thing that I said, what I was not talking about in terms of anarchism, was violence, terrorism, disorder, chaos. That's really an aberration within anarchism. You're talking about a movement of, as you said, early 20th century, and as you know, obviously we don't live in the early 20th century. You know, there was in the 1890s what was called the propaganda of the deed, where there was people, the whole philosophy was if we systematically kill off all the government leaders, then, you know, no one's going to run for government. You know, that's nothing to do with what I'm talking about. Dorothy Day, who is a devout Catholic, called herself an anarchist. Peter Kropotkin was not of that tradition. There is, to me, anarchism and violence don't make sense, because if you're an anarchist, you're against domination, and violence by definition is a form of domination. So that is not what I'm talking about at all. There's a quite different tradition of anarchism that really is the majority. You have a thinker such as Mori Bookchin, who is probably the most famous 20th century anarchist, who recently died, and he freely accepts that that anarchism began with Christianity, essentially the radical form of Christianity. I would also suggest, in terms of the Catholic Worker, we hold discussions every Wednesday night on these issues and talking about radical Christianity. At 7 o'clock, 317 South Randolph. I would invite anyone that's interested to attend our discussions, where we're trying to kind of work through these issues. And really, in saying anarchism, it gives you a little bit of an edge. You know, I think Christianity is in such a state that you need lots of adjectives to describe what kind of Christian you are. And anarchism, if we can clarify what actually anarchism is, and it's not violence, disorder, chaos, terrorism, it's voluntary association, it's mutual aid, it's decentralization, and that's the majority. What you're, in fact, talking about is historical, but it's a historical aberration.
The Wednesday night discussion on Randolph Street, since this program is heard in several towns that have Randolph Streets, we're talking about Champaign, Illinois.
Indeed.
Where this program originates out of WILL
right.
Studios.
And that's, can I just say also, in terms of fundamentally what the Catholic Worker Movement is, because it's anarchist and personal responsibility is the central ethical motif of anarchism. We are not looking, there are homeless people, there are poor people in this county. We are not looking towards the state. We are not lobbying the government to do this. We are doing it ourselves. And this is what fundamentally, as Christians, we are judged on, according to Matthew 25.
We have another caller on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with Eric Anglada.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I tuned in late because I was asleep. But here's my question. How is this congruent with keeping the faith? How as Christians do we keep the faith now? I know I missed your program, but boy, what a wonderful idea. And I'll hang up and listen to answers you have. Thank you, Mayor.
How do we keep the faith?
How is this congruent with Christianity, this type of way of thinking about anarchism and Christianity?
I think this central Christianity is about how do we live, not only what we believe, but how do we live. And I think that the central guiding force of our lives must be compassion. The Mennonites, the Anabaptists, one of the central things they talk about is mutual aid, helping each other. If you look at the Amish, look at their society. They live totally free of the government, essentially. They take care of their neighbors. They are enacting in a very profound way, love your neighbor. And so this is very congruent with anarchism, which sees that you don't look at the government. We have to build on face-to-face encounters, and how do we figure out a way to love each other and build communities of compassion where there aren't any poor. I mean, the early Christians, this is what they are so notable for. I mean, this is what they talk about in Acts 4. The book of Acts, by the way, is a deeply subversive book. The early Christians are in and out of prison. Paul says, or Peter says, we must obey God rather than men. The early Christians are accused of turning the world upside down. The early Christians live essentially kind of anarcho-communist way and freely giving up their goods and having no poor amongst them. That, I think this is how we keep the faith, is how do we live a life of love and compassion.
We're going to need to stop with that very strong comment. Invite listeners who would like to hear other programs to go to JesusRadicals.com, and you'll hear these kind of topics discussed. Thank you to Eric Anglada, who organized the recent conference here on anarchism and Christianity, for being our guest today on Keeping the Faith. Next week, our guest will be Tehimba Jess, a poet who is a professor at the University of Illinois. He'll be talking about his most recent book of poetry about the blues guitarist Lead Belly. Alice Hurt and David Kraft will be our guests on August 20, talking about nuclear energy issues. Keeping the Faith is sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. You can recycle a lot of things that might be in your garage or basement by bringing them to the Stock Pavilion at the University of Illinois on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, August 14, 15, and 16, from 12 noon to 7 p.m. We're happy to accept furniture and all kinds of household items and clothes, all sorts of things. We will then be selling these at a grand dump-and-run garage sale August 24 through 26, Thursday through Saturday. Helps raise money for the Y. We sell them very cheaply to entering students, particularly international students. And this great program is sponsored also by the University of Illinois Department of International Students. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Any day now, the United States will welcome the 300 millionth American. He or she may be a newborn baby or someone who comes across the border, legally or illegally. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, we'll look at America's changing demographics and consider the price of assimilation. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Got any home movies you'd like to save? On Saturday, August 12th, WILL is hosting Home Movie Day, part of a nationwide celebration of home movies as documents of family and community life. Film experts from the University of Illinois Library will assess your 8 or 16 millimeter films and offer guidance on preservation and reformatting. Best of all, we'll screen examples of archival films from Central Illinois history. We'll also screen your home movies if you bring them in before August 12th so we can assess their condition. For more information, go to our website, will.uiuc.edu, or call me, Jack Brighton, at 217-333-0850. Bring your films or come just to enjoy the screenings. Help celebrate Home Movie Day at WILL's TV studio in Campbell Hall from 1 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, August 12th, right here at WILL.